Through it all, we have been supported by the most passionate fan base in the country. These great fans deserve teams that make them proud. It will not be easy, but we will succeed.
Remember the past, but look forward and don't look back.
Now from the studios of Fox Sports Knoxville, this is 3 and Out with Nate Hodges and Houston Kress. Many imitators, no duplicators. Fan Run Radio.
Yeah, I'm gonna take my horse through the old town road. I'm gonna ride till I can't no more. I'm gonna take my horse through the old town road. I'm gonna ride.
It starts with everybody that touches the University of Tennessee.
And that'll do it. Tennessee is going to snap their 11-game conference losing streak.
We got to get better. And everybody, do your job, and it's that simple.
And it is over, and number one goes down. Tennessee comes back to knock off the unbeaten Zags, 76-73.
I'm going to tell you what my expectations are. My expectations is to win every game we play.
I want 100% locked in. You got it?
We can dance if we want to. We can leave your fans behind. Cause your friends don't dance, and if they don't dance, well, that's no friends of mine. Say, we can go where we want.
Welcome into the Truly Hard Seltzer Studios of Fan Run Radio, Thursday edition of the program. Nate Hodges, Davey Hudson, and the one and only Malcolm Harris in for Vol Rimmermill as he's out fishing.
Fishing?
Fishing.
Hey, man, you better bring something nice back.
That's what I'm saying.
Better bring something nice back. I'm hungry, man.
It's football season.
Yeah, I got to put a little something in my stomach.
Can't be missing shows for fishing.
Fishing.
Well, it's not that kind of fishing, Malcolm. They just, you know, they pull them in the boat. They weigh them. They see who caught the biggest, you know, they measure up, okay. See who caught the biggest fish, win a championship or something. I don't know. It's some big tournament, some faraway land. So we'll have to get updates from the boy over the weekend.
Yeah, no,
see how he does.
I definitely need to hear about it.
Yeah.
Definitely.
You a big fishing guy?
So I went fishing a couple times with my dad, man. Mm-hmm. My fishing game is like my golf game, you know? Take it or leave it.
Okay.
I'm either 100% or I'm nothing.
All right.
You a big fishing
no,
guy?
No, not no, not at all.
Okay.
No. My I don't even think I have an adult rod and reel at the house at all. I think my kids, they're not really kids' poles, but they're like kind of a little easier to handle, kind of some smaller ones. I guess I could use one of those if I like had to fish for my life or something, but no fishing here. So we'll see. We'll see if Houston has a good weekend on the lake. I don't know. It's some big tournament.
I got faith though.
He's in some local thing where he leads the point system. He's like, we're hoping that he doesn't Buffalo Bill this thing, you know, like choke it away, or Atlanta Falcons Super Bowl, so to speak.
You know you cannot say that in my presence, man.
Well, it's always good. See, this is tricks of the trade. When you do the morning show, you have to bring in some little spice to start it off, to get riled up. Because if you don't, you'll just kind of be like this, just like, oh,
you
yeah.
You brought the Thursday whole doggone seasoning cabinet, Nate.
I'm sorry. And then after what happened yesterday.
I mean, I feel so bad for the people in Atlanta, Georgia this morning.
This is also a get to know Malcolm a little bit, yeah, too, you know, for the 3 and Out audience. So Malcolm's on overtime, 6 to 8 p.m. right here on Fan Run Radio. If you don't catch overtime, I encourage you to check it out. But you're from Atlanta.
I'm from the A originally, man. Born and raised, came to UT, graduated a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And you found me in the dark, and now I'm going to bring it to light, man.
So you're a Falcons guy.
Falcons guy. Huge Falcons guy.
I mean, with college, you're Tennessee Vols.
Oh, through and through, man. I won't even put red on my body if it's – no.
Right.
Yeah.
But professionally, Falcons, not a huge baseball guy, but obviously
you had
a Braves jersey on yesterday.
Yeah, had a Braves jersey on. Producer was like, why are you smiling so big? I'm like, man, the Braves played it.
Keep
like,
minus at 6 o'clock, yeah.
Have you seen the score? And I was like, what do you mean?
Game started at 5.
And I walk in, and I saw that score, Nate. I saw that score, man. How does that happen?
That's a good question.
How does that – how is pitching that bad that early?
Davey and I had a plan. We were going to meet at Smoky Mountain Brewery at 5 o'clock to grab $6 burgers. The drive broadcast live there from 3 to 6. And he texted me about – he was early, actually. He texted me at like 4:30, 4:40. Hey, I'm headed over there. Got done with whatever he was doing. He's already on that side of town. He's like, I'll probably be early, but no rush. Just, you know, whenever you get – I was kind of in the middle of something. Took a little longer than I hoped for. So I leave about, I don't know, 4:55, maybe right at 5 o'clock. I'm like, hey, I'm on my way. I'll be there in 10 to 15 minutes. He's like, okay, cool. First pitch was like 5:02, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, it was the old 5 o'clock start with a couple buffer minutes in there. And I walk into the bar at Smoky Mountain Brewery. Now, actually, that's not true. I had looked on my phone at the score a couple times at some stoplights as I was driving over. And it was like 1-0 Cards. Like, oh, man, they're already on the board. People are going to be losing their minds. 2-0 Cards when I pulled in the parking spot. As I walk in, I think that's when they had just allowed the first hit, the first, like, big hit. It was 4-0. Then they walked the pitcher with the bases loaded.
That's when I knew, man. That's when I knew. It's a wrap.
Forget it.
It's a wrap.
10 first inning runs for the Cardinals. And I feel like they scored 5 of them without even doing anything. Wasn't that right, Davey? They had like one good hit the first 5 runs.
I think
there was
only
an error, a walk. It was a walk, an error. It was just a mess.
I believe they had 5 hits in the first inning.
5 hits and 10 runs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds about right. Then they scored 3 more runs in the next 2 to 3 innings, something like that. I mean, it was over. Russell was like, at what point, if you're the Cardinals manager, do you're like, guys, just go ahead and go up there and just make outs fast so we can get this thing over with. So like, we need to get back on the field so we can get the outs we need to get the game over with.
Final score, 13-1.
Shout out to John from Knoxville Smiles, big Braves fan. They were out there at the remote, and he goes, we're just setting them up for the biggest, you know, comeback in history. And he was obviously being facetious and laughing about it. He was a good sport. He apparently had some friends that went to the games. Like, I'm glad I didn't go with them now. I was jealous originally. And I was like, well, yeah, there's no clock in baseball, you know. Just don't make outs. Just keep getting on base, and maybe you can claw your way back into it. And then as Davey and I start talking about it more, we realize that, no, once you've given up 10 first-inning runs in an elimination game and you know you're cooked, it really is just worse. Because the team that scored the 10 now has no pressure. So they see the ball better. They hit the ball better. They're not going to make errors because, you know, there's no pressure. And the team that's given up the 10 runs, the Braves in this case, they don't even want to be out there. So they're going to play like absolute dog crap. And it's really lucky it didn't get much, you know, that much worse.
Very lucky, especially with the way, especially, you know, Freeman has been awful.
Awful.
I mean, brutally awful in this series, man.
I saw people just crushing him, obviously crushing the manager. And, I don't know what you do, though. Like, they walked the bases loaded for the pitcher. They brought in Freed, who's the one bullpen guy nobody seems to complain about,
yeah.
And he's the one that walked the pitcher to score, I think it was the 5th run. I mean, I don't know. I feel like somebody said at one time, like, the 4th run to the 5th run in baseball is like this massive number. It just feels big because if the bases are loaded and you hit a grand slam, obviously you can score 4 runs at once. So just the mental aspect, like if you're down 4-0 after the first,
yeah,
you feel like, okay, we can get a couple here, get a couple there, you know, plenty of time. I mean, that didn't even hit yet when they give up 10. So if you give up 4, you're like, okay, we can come back. You get the 5th one, and then the hits just kept coming. It was over.
It's mental, man, like football. 28 points is not that bad. But when you get to 35, it's like, man, okay, all right. They're doing their thing. So, yeah, I completely see where you're coming from.
Man, Billy Williford, he's on vacation this week, and he was feeling really good. Davey, didn't he say, I'm not even worried about this series? Pretty sure those were his exact words. I'm not even worried about the Cardinals. And I said, Billy, my biggest fear here is you are the Braves, they're the Cardinals. Like, 11 World Series championships, like 3, I think, all time for the Braves. Really only one that, like, people remember, you know, from the 90s. Really, you were there every year in the 90s and only won one.
which is insane. We don't talk. I mean, the Buffalo Bills of baseball.
I don't know if I go that far.
No, it's that far. Is it that bad? It's that
bad. You're the Atlanta guy.
It's that bad.
My bad.
Yeah, Billy was confident. I don't remember his exact quote. I mean, at least Atlanta does have. They have reached the mountaintop.
Yeah.
Bills. That's a.
Put it on your Titans last week.
Titans haven't reached the mountaintop. See, I wouldn't even say the Bills beat the Titans. The Titans beat themselves.
Yeah, that's true. Davey's a big Titans guy.
Well, we made Marcus Mariota look like Joe Montana back there, didn't we?
Your Falcons cost me NFL Eliminator round one. I picked them to beat Tennessee.
If you thought Marcus looked good, just, I mean,
I probably should
last
have consulted.
Week, Sean Watson.
I probably should have consulted you before making that selection.
Listen, pick the team that is playing against Atlanta for the rest of the season. They got me back there at safety. I'm just being completely honest.
They're making a coaching change, like, at the end of the year, right?
Get me Lincoln Riley or give me death, man.
Lincoln Riley.
That's where I'm at. Throw okay. a blank check at my boy in Oklahoma. Let's go get him right now.
Hmm. See, I like you already, Malcolm. I'm a big Lincoln Riley guy.
Because you know X's and O's, man.
Well, I feel kind of bad admitting this, but it kind of stems from when Oklahoma won here with Baker. And I was covering the game, and one of the other media members was like, you want to go do the Tennessee interviews? I was like, no. I'll just go to Oklahoma's side. We wanted to ask Eric Stryker what Butch Jones had said to him after the game. That was the main reason we went over there. But we ended up interviewing Lincoln Riley and, I don't know, the other Stoops brother, the one that's, like, not really
Mike.
Coaching anymore. Is that it? Mike. Mark's at Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
Bob's retired. And, yeah, Mike Stoops.
Oh, yeah, Mike got fired yeah. Midway through
yeah.
last season.
Yeah, because his defense sucked.
Now they got Alex Grinch.
Huh. We'll see. Big game this weekend. Malcolm's going to be on the program today and tomorrow as
yes.
we go into the end of the weekend. A huge Red River rivalry, which is a pain in the butt to say. So
much alliteration for no reason.
If you want to say shootout and just book the system like I do, that's fine. Houston refuses to do that. But anyway, the Red River shootouts this weekend. We obviously have Mississippi State and Tennessee. Noon kickoff. Lots of other big games in the SEC. And NFL obviously starts tonight with Thursday Night Football. Lots to get into. We're going to start on the other side with what Jeremy Pruitt had to say after practice. Also, the best of Vol calls, of course, on this Thursday edition of 3 and Out. Stick with us right here. It's Fan Run Radio. Welcome back into the Truly Hard Seltzer Studios, Fan Run Radio, Thursday edition of the program. Nate Hodges, Malcolm Harris, Davey Hudson with you. We're headed towards Mississippi State, noon kickoff on Saturday from Neyland Stadium. And Wednesday is a big practice and interview day for the team. Jeremy Pruitt talked to the media after practice, and then there was also Vol calls last night as well. So we're going to get into that, kind of set up how the end of the work week will go for Tennessee. I think the biggest talking point is that Pruitt started his press conference yesterday, pretty much immediately got it out there that Brian Maurer is going to be your starter on Saturday, which I think is actually a good move by Pruitt. I mean, I guess you could – he had already said that Maurer would have to have a bad week of practice.
Yeah.
So I'm glad he didn't try and get talked into, well, maybe don't name a starter. Maybe they'll think Garantano might play and we'll, you know – deceive Mississippi State like that. I never like that unless the two quarterbacks are like completely opposites. I mean, if it's like Chris Leak and Tim Tebow, or you know,
Trask,
I mean, like,
and Jones down there in Florida
yeah,
right now,
yeah, something like that. But it never then. I've never gone back and watched a game and said, you know, it was a real big advantage that they didn't let them know who was starting a quarterback. Because as soon as a guy walks out there, like. Your team knows, like the defense can say, oh yeah, this guy runs more. Oh, this guy throws more. He's slow. Like, I mean, and you can call different plays depending on who's in the game. So it's Maurer's ball.
You didn't like the six man JG reference? That was awful.
I felt like that we haven't handled the quarterback position right here at Tennessee for about the last, I don't know, whatever it is, 4 years. And it's just been, I mean, since Josh Dobbs left. We haven't handled that the most important position on the football field correctly at all, and it's frustrating.
100% agree with you.
So it's Maurer time, And I think we all knew that, but I think it was nice to go ahead and kind of get that out there. Somebody called you Malcolm Maurer.
Yeah, man. So I posted on my Instagram story. I was like, hey, I'm going to be on 3 and Out tomorrow. Y'all be ready. And someone was like, man, they're throwing you out there in the fire. Call you Malcolm Maurer. I was like, man, I might have to trademark that, bro. I might have to take that.
Well, the other thing that kind of came out of practice yesterday was that they kind of took it easy, which I'm not sure how I feel about that. They went lighter than they normally do on a Wednesday because they're banged up. So we have some guys coming back from a few injuries there, a little banged up, that have been out there. It's good to see. Seems like we had really spirited practices and then a bunch more coach speak. But anyway,
I think that's a wise decision.
You think so?
Yeah. Like, again, we always talk about this is the time of year where you're going up against your most difficult opponents with Alabama, Georgia, always kind of around the same time. And if you get banged up, it just kills the momentum as far as anything you have for the second half of the season.
That stretch
of
death. You've been on that for 2 years now.
I still think they should play the JV squad against Alabama. You're not going to win. Yeah, Malcolm, I don't know if you know my take on this, but it's like you don't play any of your starters because if you lose them there, and Pruitt's honestly, like, he's coaching for his job. Like, if he doesn't get another win this year, then he ain't coming back. So if you have everybody that you're thinking, all right, we're just going to go ahead and put them out there, you're still going to get beat by 30-plus points. Why even risk it? It's a wise strategy decision. Sometimes you might have to lose a battle to win the war.
Listen, when those, what I call the four horsemen, mm-hmm. are doing rock, paper, scissors to see who's going to get routed up on the other side of the ball, mm-hmm. that's how you know it's bad. When Jerry Jeudy, who was best wide receiver last year, the guy opposite of him, who's third on the depth chart, has four TDs, what do you do with that?
Well, it's like the defense knows who's going to get the best route. They can sit there and watch who just won it, and it doesn't matter. They're still going to get burnt.
Regardless. Exactly.
Oh, yeah. You pointed that out when it's like, okay, I know this is the primary guy. I mean, you almost like yell at the safety, hey, help me out. He's primary. Of course, then Tua could just go to the second read, I guess, as he probably does, probably would. Yeah.
Yeah,
but that's
I'm
that's,
with Davey.
That's for the next week though. I mean, this is Mississippi State. Like, this is all chips to the middle of the table. Like, you need this one
badly.
Yeah. Pruitt said he was asked about the offensive line because is it Riley Locklear had the mm-hmm. had the concussion?
Yeah.
Although Pruitt doesn't like the word concussion.
He does not. I've noticed
he
never
got his
says.
Bell rung.
Yeah. Yeah, that's his go-to, his bell rung. I mean, it's concussed, Coach.
Well, there's no scientific proof that we know concussions cause issues later on in life.
Well, somebody told us that when he first took the job. Pruitt doesn't believe in concussions. I'm like, wait, what do you mean? Yeah, he's not going to say the word concussion. He'll just say, like, he got his bell rung or something. We're like, that does not sound like a wise decision. But we didn't really, like, there wasn't any real need to share that information necessarily. But then he just comes right out and kind of says it this week. Like, all right, Coach, that's great. I mean, during the Butch Jones tenure, you had an offensive lineman that was obviously concussed on the field, and they didn't take him out, and it probably cost, you know, that offensive line coach his next job because they weren't, you know. But whatever. Doesn't sound, you know, you're the head coach of Tennessee. Call it what you want, I guess. But anyway, he said he was asked about shuffling around the offensive line after practice on Wednesday, and he said, well, we've been moving guys around. It's been like that all year because Trey doesn't practice on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Went out there today in spider pads to give him and Riley a little bit of an opportunity there just to see where they're at. Of course, Riley is Riley Locklear, who had the concussion, and they're hoping can come back and play this week. Felt like that's the best thing, Pruitt continued. So we've had to shuffle guys. Jerome Carvin has been up there. Brandon Kennedy has had a little bit of a sore knee. I hadn't seen anyone heard about that yet.
I have not heard about that. That kind of made my eyebrows look up. I don't know if you saw me, but.
Yeah, Brandon Kennedy apparently has a sore knee. Probably didn't take as many reps today as he's taken, so that's all there was to it. That's what Pruitt said about the offensive line.
Now, with Brandon Kennedy, should we be worried? Him coming off that ACL injury?
I'm not sure which knee they're referring to.
Yeah, I don't know if he's putting maybe more pressure on the other knee because he's trying to stay off of that one or if it's the same one. But, man, I mean, if he were to have to miss roll him out there, play as hard as you can against Mississippi State, and like Dave said, if he's limited at all next week, just put in somebody else.
I treat next week like a bye, and I know that's bad to say.
No, it's not. No, we're at that point, man.
We're here. We are embracing the suck.
Mississippi State has picked like their four most winnable games on the SEC schedule to make sure their suspended players play in those games.
I'm glad you said that because I actually got some quotes from Joe Moorhead from the SEC teleconference, and he was asked about that. So there was a question to Coach Moorhead that said if there was a basically asking if there was a strategy to using any suspended players this season and when they are told they will play, because we were kind of having this discussion yesterday of, well, if I mean, I guess what's the psyche of those players? Do they know last minute whether or not they're in or out? And Moorhead said, well, a lot of that stuff was handled at the beginning of the season. Those kids are made well aware in advance whether or not they're going to be playing or not. And then so obviously, I mean, he's going to give a coach speak answer here, but they did ask a follow-up question on whether that the suspensions have been a distraction to the rest of the team. And he just said, I think it's very challenging in terms of game planning and depth and practice reps and things like that, but it hasn't been a distraction to the team.
So they have 10 guys that have to miss 8 games on the season, roughly six of which are in the 2-deep. And a couple are, like, definite starters. So,
I mean, I don't know if this has been talked about, but if you're missing 8 games, there's only 12 in the season, are they able to use a redshirt on those guys? Or does the suspension play into it?
I bet they're able to redshirt them.
That is such a – I wouldn't even thought about that until just now. Yeah, they would have to be able to redshirt, right?
Yeah.
So, speaking of news on redshirts, Tennessee –
has made an interesting decision with a wide receiver. We'll talk about that on the other side. Stick with us. It's Hour 1, Thursday edition of 3 and Out. That's good producing, baby.
I forgot, too, for a second. No, I was like, oh, man, we got to actually talk about that.
Yeah. Well, before we get into Tennessee's redshirt plan, Matt Squire tweets in, doesn't believe in concussions? What the hell? Has anyone ever thought that Pruitt may have CTE? Just let that one sit there. So anyway, back to the wide receiver position. You know, I'm a little annoyed that Trey Knox is crushing it so much at Arkansas. You know, these local guys that in-state guys that Tennessee kind of slow played and then ended up not getting. And I know probably didn't matter that much this year at wide receiver, but next year you're losing a lot. So what are they going to do about it? Well, big news yesterday, Brandon Johnson is going to redshirt
senior.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he'll be graduated. I mean, I guess, man, Brandon Johnson's got some nice feet. He's done some things when he's had the opportunity, but he just doesn't have a lot of targets his way, man.
Well, until Brian Maurer got in the game, I didn't feel like even the top receivers were getting a lot of quality targets.
That's crazy to say, but it's absolutely true.
I mean, Garantano just, I don't know how, it's one thing if he was still just kind of struggling, I guess, but the weirdest part is that he got worse from last year to this year. Like, how do you get worse? I know it's another new coordinator, but it was so bad last year. I mean, if last year's season had been fairly good on offense and he got a little worse with a new coordinator and a new system, you'd say, okay, well, that, you know, he and Jim Chaney haven't kind of gelled real well yet. But last year was awful, and then this year's been worse.
On the season, Brandon Johnson has 2 receptions for 31 yards. I mean, really, like 2017, he was one of the team's leading receivers. Obviously, that was the last year of the Butch Jones era, but he had 37 receptions for 482 yards and a touchdown. His best game was that South Carolina game where I believe he got over 100 yards receiving.
You know, I hadn't even realized that. I hadn't even thought about that he was, you know, more of a contributor a while back. I don't know. I guess I've in my head, he's in the rotation and just hasn't been getting the football.
Yeah.
But I don't know. 6'2", 195 out of Fort Lauderdale, Florida. The plan, I guess Pruitt said they talked to him, talked to his parents, basically said, hey, look, you know, our top guys are obviously all leaving at the end of the year. They're getting all the play time right now. You know, what do you think about just shutting it down, you know, having your four games this year and then coming back next year? And I guess thought that was a good idea.
Johnson was the leading receiver in three games in 2017.
Really?
He had over 100 yards against South Carolina. Man. And, excuse me, no, UMass.
Okay.
He was the leading receiver against South Carolina, and he had over 100 yards against Vanderbilt at the end of the season.
I mean, he's a three-star, you know, recruit. Okay, so here's the weird thing. We talked about this on Three and Out, Malcolm. I don't know if you guys have gotten into it much, but Herm Edwards said over the summer that when you take over a new program, the real problem with the transfer stuff in college football is that you're going to lose guys to the transfer portal because, you know, the old coach recruited them, whatever. They're not getting to play. You're trying to, like, kind of over-recruit some guys. You're trying to restock the roster. So guys leave your program, which is fine. You want them to go kind of find greener pastures if that's what's best for them. But any player that you bring in counts towards your recruiting numbers, towards your 25 every year. So a lot of fans don't realize that if you sign 25 new freshmen every year, you can't take a grad transfer at all. Like, there's no space.
It eats into those numbers.
Yeah, and every time you take a grad transfer, you have to either count them into that class or count them in the next class. Like, there's some wiggle room based on the calendar and the timing of which class you count them into, but they all count. So if you sign five grad transfers, that's five incoming freshmen you can't take. So Tennessee has obviously had a lot of attrition this year, and I guess as I'm thinking about this, it's better to keep Brandon Johnson around because he already counts. Like, having an extra year of him next year and pushing back his final year of eligibility will allow you to have another wide receiver on the roster next year that doesn't hurt you trying to bring in new players at other positions or whatever.
Well, now that you put it like that, yeah, that's actually smart.
Now, I don't know if it's smart for Brandon Johnson. I mean,
unless he wants to, you know, prolong his education, which I'm all for, you know, get as many resources utilized as possible. But, yeah, man, I'd be kind of upset just personally. I just know who I am. Like,
yeah.
I was getting all these targets, man. I was leading receiver while Juwan was hurt out. I was doing my thing. And now, you know, Ramel Keaton's getting in the game over me.
He had 37 receptions, obviously, in 2017, 2018, that dropped down to 14, and then this year, as I just said, 2. I mean, he was tied for receptions in 2017 with John Kelly, and he led the team in receiving yards.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I'd. I'm trying to think how I would handle it. I'd probably. He's probably already upset, right? Like before this, he's not, like you're talking about, with where he is on the pecking order. Is he behind Keaton or just a different spot behind one of the other guys and not getting in as much?
I think they're just aligned, man. I think it's Marquez. I think it's, you know, the dog, obviously. Mm-hmm. And then everybody else falls in line after that. They're interchangeable.
Yeah, Palmer's technically listed as the other starter. And then I guess you've got Keaton, Johnson, and Tillman, I think, are technically the two deep the rest of the way. But it does feel like they've tried to – I mean, Ramel Keaton, are they going to be able to redshirt him too? We can look at his play numbers and stuff.
I think he's going to be a true sophomore next year. I don't think you have the luxury to be
able to. He's already played in five games.
Oh, really?
Okay.
Keaton has, yeah.
So he's officially off that.
I mean, it feels like they didn't have to do that, but I guess they think high enough of him that an extra year at the end, who cares, right? Like, just play four and be done.
Playing a long game too, you know?
Because
they want to get more out of Marietta. So.
Mm. Okay. No, that makes sense. Because he's, what, same high school as Harrison Bailey?
Yep, and Gilbert, too.
Yeah.
So.
Which We had high hopes. I don't know if those, if he's still even on the board. There, I feel like a lot of those five-star guys after Georgia State were like, yeah, you can still call me, but I might not call you as much, you know, Tennessee. So we'll, I don't know. We'll see. It would really help to win some SEC games here in the back half of the schedule. But yeah, Brandon Johnson gonna how many games has he played in? Is he
actually Keaton did not play in Florida, so he's only played four.
So he is eligible for a redshirt still
at the moment. But yeah, I mean, if they're shutting down Johnson, they're gonna play Keaton as the next backup. Yeah, yeah. But again, that's a senior. If he's not, I mean. I know the plan right now is for him to come back next year, but as you mentioned, if he's graduating, he's also leaving his options open too. With I guess it doesn't matter. He could grad transfer and play immediately anywhere. If he decides at the end of the year, man, this thing is a mess. I don't know, or I don't know. Let's say it's not even that bad. Let's say it's fine, but. I don't know. He really likes T. Martin, and T. Martin becomes the offensive coordinator somewhere else. And T's like, hey, I got this huge hole wide receiver. You want to come play your grad senior year, you know, over here at this other school? Like, Brandon Johnson's options are completely open with this plan also.
Especially now that Tennessee, I mean, it's a known fact that UT is trying to become a run-first offense. So a lot of pass catchers are, like, really weird. Like, why would you not go to an Oklahoma, a Wazoo, you know, things of that nature.
Yeah. Yeah, that. Well, who was it that transferred away, the other receiver?
Jock Johnson? Jock Jones.
Yeah, and he said, David Ubbin interviewed him, and he said he did a really good job of not throwing anybody under the bus, I felt like. But the one thing he said is, he's like, what type of school are you going to go to? And he said, well, I'm going to try and go to one that throws the ball more, you know. And it didn't sound like he meant Tennessee hadn't been throwing it, but they will. It sounded like, in his mind, Tennessee's not a pass-heavy offense, and he wants to go to one that is. So there's that.
JG magnified those issues, though.
100%.
Let's just be clear on the record.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The passing offense was a completely different beast, even against a really good Georgia defense last Saturday, and hopefully it takes another step forward next. We'll stick on Tennessee. Come back, final segment, hour number one. Stick with us right here on Fan Run Radio. Final segment, hour number one. It's brought to you by MyBookie, the official sports book of Fan Run Radio. MyBookie also the sponsor of Thursday Night Football right here on WKGN, AM 1340, FM 105.7. Tonight it is Pats and Giants, so set your alarm clocks for that one. Yuck.
Danny Dimes.
I'm sure when the NFL made the schedule, they're like, oh, look at this, the Super Bowl rematch. This will be great. Well, you know, maybe Daniel Jones will be starting, and if not, if Eli's doing well, then it'll make for an Eli versus Brady thing again, and I don't know. I'm not even excited. I guess seeing Daniel Jones play against that Pats defense will be fun, but
I don't think any of the primetime games this year have been that exciting.
What? They had some good ones.
Gosh, yes, man. That
58-yard game-winning field goal.
Okay, outside of let me clarify. Thursday night primetime games.
Thursday. Okay, I can't remember exactly which ones are Thursday off the top of my head, but anyway. We'll have it on the radio for you tonight right here on 1340 and 105.7. But staying on Tennessee, we'll get to NFL later. I know Davey's a big NFL. You're a big NFL guy too, right?
I'm an NFL junkie.
All right. Tyler tweets in, so we are run first and averaging at minimum against Georgia and Florida 5 yards a carry, and we decide to line up and throw it 25 out of every 30 plays. Lots of question marks after that. And put the entire second half still in a ball game on your true freshman quarterback. Doesn't make any sense. I agree. Maybe we can even open up the phone lines for hour two, kind of with that. Like, what? Pruitt feels like he wants to push the running game narrative. Like, hey, we've got to be able to run the football. He said that. I think it's in one of his Vol calls answers last night. You know, he was talking about how we have to be able to run the football. But it seems like the play calling in these games, at some point, Jim Chaney has just abandoned the run and tried to throw the ball a ton. Or he's calling a bunch of RPOs, and the defense is forcing Tennessee to throw the ball to the outside. So I don't – it feels like another year we really don't have a great offensive identity.
I mean, you have to cater to your personnel, man. Like what Lincoln Riley said, how you cater to what you have. If you don't fit your quarterback, you have a bad system, you know? And we have to take advantage of what we have right now, and that's legit two outside perimeter threats in Juwan and Marquez. Mm-hmm. But with the run, man, I mean, Eric Gray still hasn't made a touchdown. It's game six, you know? Like, what do you do at this point?
Well, I mean, you only have three rushing touchdowns on the season so far, and two of those are by Ty Chandler, the other by Brian Maurer.
Doesn't that rank us, like, next to last? I think Akron is, like, the only team with maybe I'm mixing up my offensive ineptitude statistics, but there was some stat where, like, we're only ahead of Akron on some offensive stat. It might be rushing touchdowns for
these stats, I think, are a little inflated because they take into effect the Chattanooga game, but, like, I wish I could just throw that FCS game out. But right now, every single one of your three-headed attack at running back is averaging 4 yards or more a carry. On the season, Ty Chandler, 5.4 yards a carry. Eric Gray, 4.0 yards a carry. Tim Jordan, 4.7 yards a carry.
Yeah.
I'm liking Tim Jordan back in the fold, man.
That's good.
I'm liking that a lot.
Yeah, Pruitt talked about how, you know, how important that is for the offense too. I mean, he's a guy that I think he might even be the best out of the three at pass protection too. Although he's not, it still kind of becomes a problem because he's the least likely to hit a home run on like a check down. So it's kind of risk reward. Like, do you want to have the best guy in for pass protection, or do you want to have Eric Gray in, who's the worst, but if he gets the ball in space, might be able to make more guys miss? Ty Chandler, probably the fastest, just straight line guy. And I don't know. We came into the season. We talk about it constantly. It's like, you know, how are they going to use Ty Chandler in the pass game? How are we going to, you know, we should be able to use him all over the field. I think they've tried like one classic running back screen all season and it didn't even work.
I was about to ask, when's the last time you guys have seen a running back screen?
There was one in one game. There's probably more that I just haven't paid attention to. But I don't I just can't envision any others.
Okay, this is going back to how we thought Ty Chandler would be a lot more active in the passing game. He's got 4 receptions on the year for 7 yards. To put that in perspective, there's only one other player on the team that has caught a pass and has less yards. And that's Brian Maurer when he caught his own pass for -2 yards. So even guys who've only had like one reception, like Princeton Font had a one reception for 19 yards, like everybody else, yards-wise, like Ty Chandler is the worst of anyone who's caught a pass.
Yeah, that's an issue for me, man.
I was correct. Akron has 2 rushing touchdowns on the season. Tennessee is tied with a handful of other schools with 3. That's second worst in all of college football. Not FBS. All of it. Like, well, sorry. Yeah, not Power 5. All of FBS. So that's great. It's just fantastic. But let's talk about the positive side. With Brian Maurer at quarterback, I say, okay, Malcolm, the offense is going to be a lot better again this week. Mm-hmm. Going to play Mississippi State. They're a defense that's not as good as Georgia. Brian Maurer's playing quarterback. The whole game plan is built for him. We've got those 2 good receivers you're talking about on the outside. We feel like we have some running backs that can do some things. Just maybe the new quarterback's going to help all this kind of be better. Do you consider Tennessee a run team first or a pass team first?
I consider Tennessee a pass team first. At this point in time, right now, yeah, if I'm Chaney, I'm calling about 35 to 40 pass plays this weekend. I know that's heavy, but, like, I saw what he did against Georgia, and also I know that I need to see Dom more involved, man.
That's another player.
We hear, like, man, he's playing some really good football for us, you know, but he's doing things that don't show up necessarily on the stat sheet. You know, obviously at Florida, he had a walk-in touchdown, but again, quarterback play.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think? Are we run first?
It's
I hope not.
I think last year you definitely had a mismatch between what the head coach wanted to do on offense and what the offensive coordinator wanted to do on offense.
100%.
This year, I think Jim Chaney, actually I know Jim Chaney subscribes to the train of thought that you mentioned earlier, that you build the offense around your personnel. We've seen Jim Chaney here at Tennessee the first time throw the ball a million times. Everybody hated him for it. He wouldn't run the ball on third and one, and there were even plays that season where he tried to run the ball on third and one, and they got stuffed and couldn't get anything. And it was kind of like, yeah, see, fans, this is why we can't run the ball. Like, our offensive line can't run block. We've got Tyler Bray. We're going to throw the ball around all over the place. We've got these great receivers. I feel like they're kind of in that place right now. I think Jeremy Pruitt wants – if Jeremy Pruitt's playing NCAA football and can create the team the way he wants it, he wants to line up and just smash the football over and over and over and then maybe go play action every once in a while. The reality is this team can't do that. This team, I know everybody said the last few weeks, offensive line's playing better, offensive line's playing better, offensive line's – you look at the grades out of the Georgia game, the offensive line is still – a below-average unit for the middle of the SEC. Like, they are still grading out as below-average, backup-level play. And the fact of the matter is this team can't just line up and continue to run the ball, run the ball, run the ball. And I think what Georgia did is they did get beat for the big touchdown early, but I think they just started sacking the box more against Tennessee to take away the RPO game, to take away the quick stuff, and to shut down the running game. And then at that point, you know, that's when we saw Maurer not have a good, easy decision on where to go with the football, and all of a sudden he's getting hit, and, you know, things aren't going as well.
And the offensive line was so bad at first. I mean, it probably has gotten a little bit better, because I thought, based off the Pro Football Focus numbers, like the first game against Georgia State and then your first...
Well, I do think the offensive line's better than they were last year, but that's just not saying much.
No, that's what I'm saying. It's like we've set the standard so low, yeah. Just what we have seen get better, we're putting too much... I guess, fluff into it.
Like, I don't think you can just line up this weekend and run the football at Mississippi State when they know you're going to run the football. You know what I mean?
I mean, especially looking at who the defensive coordinator is. The guy who built pieces of this team that we're currently talking about right now, Bob Shoup.
Bob Shoup is the defensive coordinator of Mississippi State. Last year, they were the best defense in the country. They did lose a lot of guys off that
Fortunately,
unit.
Their entire starting defensive line is gone.
Yeah, they're all in the NFL.
That's crazy,
but I mean, yeah, he's familiar at least with some of these veteran guys on Tennessee's roster.
Yeah,
it's weird. I mean, we go back and I can't remember what game it was when 2017 was playing out, and obviously it was bad. It might have been after the Florida game, but they let Bob Shoup actually go in front of the media, and we were just thinking, like, this guy is actually really intelligent, and it seems like he knows what he wants to do. There's just other issues within the team that's making it extremely, extremely difficult for him. So I'm confident he's going to have a really good game plan for when they do come in here.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was after Florida hit the bomb, right, to beat Tennessee. Butch Jones is like, yeah, your defense gave this play up to lose the game. You're going to talk in front of the media. And Shoup told the media exactly what the call was, what they were thinking, why they did it, and then went into some of the other stuff. And then there were these quotes kept coming out during the year about how he would kind of shake his head at all the quote-unquote drama around the team. And, I mean, it was pretty, you know, Butch Jones made Bob Shoup use the old verbiage when they called plays for Tennessee's defense. It was just a train wreck here. He's obviously been a good coach everywhere else. He's been, whether it be Vanderbilt before, you know, Penn State, and then now at Mississippi State. So that'll be a challenge. But I don't know. Like, I know Pruitt wants to be run first, but with this group of guys, like, what's the best strategy? Is it to call a lot of RPOs and let Brian Maurer, your true freshman, put it on him to read the defenses correctly the whole time? Is it, do you protect him and try and run the ball and be real conservative with the play calling? Or if Mississippi State dares you to throw and push the ball down the field, do you say, yep, that's what Auburn tried to do last year, and it's our signature win here at Tennessee? You see man coverage, Brian. Throw it out there to, you know, Juwan Jennings and Marquez Callaway. I don't know. Good questions. You can weigh in, 865-546-8200 on the Next Door Home Group Hotline. We kick off hour two next.